ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् मैसूर्योभ्राजो दधातु ॐ शान्तिः 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 So coming back to Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, we have to remember few things. First, that in the very beginning, many months ago, when I started the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, I said that the first two chapters of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad present the one prakriya called Adhyaropa Apavada Prakriya. Of this one prakriya, one method of unfoldment, adhyaropaha, the superimposition, is presented in the first chapter, and apavadaha is given in the second chapter. So adhyaropaha, we all know very well, adhyaropaha means seeing the world as it is, and taking this world to be real is adhyaropaha. We don't need to make effort to take the world real, because already in our perception, in our understanding, the world is very real for us. So accepting our perception, acceptance of a perception of the world as real, is adhyaropaha. But later on, negating the world, that this world is not as real as we see it, as we understand it to be. And the world is as though, understanding the fact that the world is as though, world is not real, is negation of the world, which is apavadaha, which is meant by the apavada. And I also said in the very beginning, adhyaropaha is presented differently in this Upanishad. The world is not described like in other Upanishads. The world is nothing but karma and karma phalam. What is this world? There are many ways of understanding the universe, and one of the ways of looking at the world is that it is karma and karma phalam. What is this world, if we ask? This universe is nothing but the actions and the results. You perform the action, results are produced, a result of which you enjoy the world. The experience of the world, enjoyment of the world, experience of pairs of opposites, and the very birth and the death, in between birth and death, experience the world is all possible only because of the karma. Karma phalam we have earned. Therefore, the world can be said to be karma and karma phalam. That is why in the first three chapters, first three brahmanas, first three sections of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the three upasanas are taken and they'll be analyzed. This Hiranyagarbha Upasana, Virad Upasana, two Virad Upasanas, and one Hiranyagarbha Upasana, three meditations are described as karma. And Upasana Phalam, the attainment of Hiranyagarbha Loka, Hiranyagarbha position, also is discussed there. Anyway, by analyzing, just presenting three meditations and the result, and the description of Hiranyagarbha, etc., Upanishad helps us understand the fact that karma, limitation of karma and the karma phalam. That it is made very clear that there's no moksha at all. There's no moksha possible. Moksha cannot be accomplished as a result of karma. That is made very clear. The later on, in the same adhyaropa portion, that is in the first chapter itself, Upanishad continued to explain out of the creation, that this universe has come into existence from Brahma. That is, Hiranyagarbha created this. And having created available for Bhagavan, available for recognition in our own mind as the truth of the truth of essence. That is explained through Anupravesha Shruti. We saw that. Thereafter, and this reality, the Atma, the Brahman, is available our own mind means, and may one see this Atma, the innermost essence of the individual, obtaining as the self, itself is the Atma, the truth of everything. Atme te upasita. Vidya Sutram also we saw. Thereafter we moved on to, don't worry, when I come back, we'll do with the mantras. We'll take the mantras and I'll show you how to understand the mantras. And we also saw, we have recently, I think last class we missed, previous class, we taken up this topic of love. So what is that? We understood even the concept of significance of love, concept of love. And we have to see the 8th mantra of the 4th section. The first chapter, 4th section, 8th mantra, we have to see. What is that we love the most in the world? What is that which is the dearest to us? That is made very clear in this mantra. This is all preparation for us to go back to Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, first chapter from the beginning. When I come back, we'll go back and see the mantras. We'll study the text from the beginning. But now let us see this, read this mantra. First chapter, 4th section, 8th mantra. Tadetat preyaha putrat preyo vittat. Have you found it? Have you all found the mantra? Okay. If you haven't found us, don't worry. I'll make it clear. I'll be reading one by one because important mantras I wanted to memorize. The last mantra which I taught, I want to memorize. I explained that. Tadetat preyaha putrat. Tadetat preyaf putrat. Preyo vittat, preyonyasmat, sarvasmat, tadetat preyav putrat. I read 2 times so that you can listen to me fast. Second time, third time, can say after along with me. Tadetat preyav putrat. Putrat preyo vittat preyo vittat preyonyasmat sarvasmat antarataram sarvasmat antarataram yadayam atma. The first sentence, second sentence, sayon sayon sayonyamatmanah priyam sayonyamatmanah priyam bruvanam bruyat priyam rotsyati tishvaroha tathaivasyat Atmanameva priyamupasita saya atmanameva priyamupaste nahasya priyam pramayuktam bhavati. Don't worry, I'll make it very clear each and every word here. See, what is said in this mantra, in this, what is most loud for one is one's own self. Atma is the most loud. Everyone loves one's own self. What is, we may say that I love the world, I love the other person, I love the people, I love this, I love my country, I love my nation, I love Bhagavan, we may say, speaking, love for friend, love for family, love for children, love for anybody in the world, love for anything in the world is actually love for one's own self. Why? Because why Atma is the most loud? Why one's own self is the most loud? Because you are the only source of happiness. Atma is the only source of happiness. You are the only source of happiness. Therefore, Atma being the only source of happiness, and happiness being the most loved, Atma is the most loved. Atma is the dearest. Whether we like it or not, this is the fact. So love for anything else in the world is actually love for one's own self. And how do we know that Atma is the only source of happiness? Already in the previous classes we have seen, whatever is loved is that it must be an object of pleasure. We always like things which pleases us. We hate things which make us, which triggers our pain in us. When a thing triggers the pain in us, we hate. So in this context, we have to understand the hatred first. And we have, that we can understand the love also later on. What is an object of hatred? When do we hate things or people or situations or objects? When do we hate them? We hate, the hatred comes along with anger. So anger, the unpleasantness, the hatred, the pain, always pain, when the pain is triggered, the pain results in hatred. So pleasure, this results in desire. Pleasure is desirable. Pleasure results in liking. The pain results in dislike. So what, when does the pain arise? When does the pain arise? What causes the pain? When the anything which is, what is pain, how pain is caused, what really causes the pain? We do not know. And when the pain comes, how we, whatever is nimittam for the pain, and that becomes object of hatred, or even it triggers the anger. So here in the context of under the love, we understand the hatred also first. So here Shastram says this. Nothing in the world, because our perception of the world is wrong. There's error in our perception of the world, that we mistake the world as a source of happiness. We think world makes us happy. Things make us happy. This perception of the world, that world is a source of happiness, is also wrong. Because world is not a source of happiness, definitely. Then world is neither responsible for our unhappiness. World is neither the source of happiness, nor is the world responsible for our unhappiness. But we think the world is responsible for our unhappiness. World makes me unhappy. And so this is also wrong. So this both we are seeing the world as a source of happiness, as a response for unhappiness also, is erroneous. And here the Shastram says, world is not responsible for our unhappiness also. Any amount of pain, any degree of pain, any degree of grief, sorrow, sadness we go through, definitely nothing in the world is responsible at all for our unhappiness, unpleasantness, sadness. But when we mistake the world to be responsible for my unhappiness, then we also have our own reasons for hating the world. So hatred itself is, hatred is a state of mind. The bitterness, the hatred or unpleasantness, pain, you know, the bitterness, hatred actually is a state of mind obtaining in the thought which rises, it is there, it is mithya, it is there. It rises whenever pain is triggered. Whenever pain rises, the pain comes, then hatred comes, bitterness comes, anger comes. Anger, bitterness, the hatred obtaining in your thought rises, is there in the form of a thought. It's a state of mind. It's a mental condition. It is there whenever pain comes. Okay? So pain is the responsible for the state of mind that we go through. Every human being has to go through at some point or the other. Sometime or the other. So it's thoroughly analyzed. Hatred is thoroughly analyzed. It is not a very desirable state of mind. It's not all desirable. We know when there is hatred, when there is bitterness, when there is anger, naturally one cannot be comfortable. It's a discomfort. It's a pain. It's a discomfort. It's a burden. It will distract you. It makes the attention scattered. Therefore, it is not a desirable condition, mental condition. So when it is there, when is it there? When there is a pain, it comes. Now, when does the pain occur? What is it which causes the pain? Actually, Shastram says differently. What is that which causes the pain? Really speaking, pain comes only when the pain, again, is state of mind, which surfaces, which occurs whenever the fundamental problem of smallness centered on I is triggered. In any situation, in any occasion, if the sense of smallness centered on I is triggered, it's a smallness, not inadequacy, it is smallness. The sense of smallness. Previously, I was talking only about sense of inadequacy. But now I say the sense of smallness centered on I is triggered. Then the pain comes. When the pain comes, then the hatred is possible, anger is possible, bitterness is possible. So what is that which causes the pain? Does an external situation really trigger the sense of the smallness, the fundamental problem? No. The external situation is only instrumental. Instrumental, it is not responsible. Instrumental in triggering the sense of smallness centered on I. Because the sense of smallness centered on I is a fundamental problem. The common human problem, which is already there naturally in every human mind, is subconscious. It's not that you have, I have. Like all of us have heads, all of us have eyes, nose, teeth, all of us have hands and legs, all of us similarly, all of us have our subconscious. In every subconscious mind, there is sense of smallness centered on I. Latent and dormant. No human mind is exception here. Because when the mind, when the human mind is, means there is the mind with ignorance. And where there is ignorance, this fundamental problem will be naturally there in subconscious. But as long as it is not triggered, as long as it does not surface, we do not even know that there is such a problem of sense of smallness in the mind. But when it is there, it is triggered, it surfaces, that is when the pain comes. I am small, I'm rejected, I'm unwanted. You know, I'm not important. That the feeling of being ignored, the feeling of being rejected, the feeling of being unwanted, the feeling of being small, that surfaces. What is lateness of course, this surfaces, then the pain comes. The pain comes, the in pain, people cannot think. The pain immediately will result in anger, and also bitterness and hatred. Now, what is it which triggers? The external situation is only nimittam, which is already there in subconscious. Why is it there in subconscious? And that we have already learned, studied in the very beginning, in introduction itself. It is because there is self-ignorance. In fact, ignorance of the reality is ignorance of the self. And the self-ignorance is there. Therefore, there's no knowledge of what I is. And because of which, there's no distance between I obtaining in the thought and the rest of the thoughts which form part of the mind. And there's no distance between the mind and sense organs. There's no distance between the sense organs and the body. There's no distance between I and the mind, I and the body, I and the sense organs. There's no distance. But still, like if no wave is distant from any other wave, there's no distance between the waves, but still every wave is distinct from every other wave. Distinct but not distant. Similarly here, I is not distant from the body, mind, sense complex, but still I is distinct from the body, mind, sense complex. But because of this distancelessness, the closest proximity, this I, because there's also ignorance of what this I is, because of this ignorance, this I is identified with the body, mind, sense complex. Therefore, the limitations of the body, limitations of the mind, limitations of sense organs, limitations of the matter is superimposed upon the limitations of the consciousness. Limitations of the anatma, non-I, non-self are superimposed upon the self. Therefore, there is a wrong notion about the self. And it is these wrong notions one entertains about the self results in the common human fundamental problem of sense of smallness centered on I. Therefore, it is always there, latent, dormant. But it is when we are busy, occupied with so many things, we forget this problem. Therefore, we think we are happy, we are pleased. So then we don't go through the pain, we escape the pain. That is why keeping ourselves occupied and busy and involving ourselves in something or the other, when our attention is held by different things in the world, naturally we forget ourselves. When we forget ourselves, that we are so extroverted, you're extroverted to the extent that you forget yourself. Naturally, for that the fundamental problem is latent, it doesn't surface. But in those situations, some occasions, some situations, the fundamental problem is triggered. The sense of smallness centered on I is triggered, and whenever in any situation, other people's behavior, other people's talking, or what is happening unintentionally, unknowingly, sometimes knowingly as they might have done, but there's no intention of triggering the fundamental problem. It naturally, it's our own perception, the fundamental problem is triggered. That is when the pain comes. I am small. The pain results in anger and also bitterness and hatred. When there's hatred in anger, we do not know what we are talking, we do not know what we are writing, we do not know what we are saying, we don't even think what we are doing. That's why unknowingly, in anger, in pain, in bitterness, whatever our behavior is, that is not thoughtful action, definitely that is thoughtless reaction. And again, other people may become, if they're not prudent, careful, they may become victims of the reactions also. It may cause a lot of damage also. Doesn't matter. Again, another person's paratha, that one day they become victims of other person's problems. That is why sometimes one may become the victim of other person's problem. Purely because paratha. Then why should you associate with such a person? It's all the parabdha also. This is the parabdha. Anyway, we have understood now the Shastra study is not for analyzing the world. It is for self-analysis. It is for our moksha, for our jnanam, our happiness, our peace, not for finding fault with the world, how the world is. It is for our own betterment, our own happiness, our own peace. So this is how the hatred is. Now let's come to this point. If this is the hatred, and is this world, therefore the world is not source of response for our unhappiness. Therefore Shastram says, unless and until this ignorance is resolved, so the wrong notion about this, the error in the perception of the self is corrected. The notions one has about oneself are corrected. There's no way of being happy with the world. So definitely we will be finding fault with the world. Otherwise, definitely, if the error in the perception of one's own self is corrected, the wrong notions about the self are resolved cognitively, but understanding what this I is and seeing the fact there's no real I. There's no real I. What is only Atma? The all-pervasive reality, only reality. Other than that, there's no such thing called I other than Atma. So it's repeatedly listening and assimilating this fact. When the wrong notions about the self resolve, definitely one can see, one can appreciate what fullness is. One can be free from the hold of emotional pain. One can be free from the pain, and freeing oneself from the pain rising in him of a thought triggered by his fundamental problem is actually freedom. Freedom from pain, that is what is actually the fullness. The fundamental problem is resolved, definitely there is no pain. And when there's no pain, nothing can trigger the fundamental problem of sense of smallness centered on I. I tell you, Shastram promises, Shastram guarantees, you cannot have something called pain at all. Whenever pain comes, if we deeply analyze the reason for the pain, it will finally take you to this fundamental problem of sense of smallness centered on I. And if this fundamental problem of sense of smallness centered on I is resolved, nothing, no external situation, no behavior, nothing can trigger any pain in us. Paininess. Pain cannot surface at all. Pain will resolve for good. Something called emotional pain, cannot rise at all. The fundamental problem is sorted out, pain will resolve for good. If there's no pain at all, then what is there is only fullness. What is there is only near fullness. So when there is fullness, then you see that is when you will not find fault with the world also. The world can be accommodated absolutely as it is. Accommodation of anything and anybody and any behavior, entire world is possible absolutely as it is, without any expectation on the part of the world. It has to be different from what it is. You can accommodate, accept the world as it is. That is an expression of love. When there is acceptance of the world as it is, there is an expression of love. That is why we say that's expression of fullness. Love is expression of fullness. This is one side. And second thing, so world is not responsible for my sorrow. The second thing, world is not a source of happiness also. And the source of happiness is one's own self. And whatever we love in the world is actually, we only love things which make us happy, which pleases us. Therefore, and Shastram says, and one's own self is the only source of happiness. Therefore, what is most loved in the world is one's own self. And how to understand the Atma, one's own self is a source of happiness. Because happiness again is not a state of mind. It is a synonym of the word, another noun, fullness or limitlessness. Limitlessness is happiness. Fullness is happiness. Why? Because in inadequacy, there is unhappiness. Therefore, in fullness, there is happiness. And second thing, in being limited is being unhappy. Therefore, being limitless is being happy. See, being limited is being unhappy. When are you limited? In ignorance, when you identify, I is identified with the limit, body, mind and complex. The limitations of body, mind and complex are superimposed upon the I. When there's a notion, I'm a limited being, that being limited is being unhappy. Therefore, being limitless is being happy. Therefore, limitlessness is happiness. Okay, happiness is not a state of mind. It is understanding of what limitlessness is understanding of what happiness, being happiness. Understanding what limitlessness is happiness. And limitlessness is the nature of the self, nature of the reality. Therefore, limitlessness is the nature of the self. And limitless, being limitless means being time-wise limitless, being spatially limitless, and being object-wise limitless. There's nothing in the world which is not the Atma, which is not the self. It's exactly like saying there's no wave in the ocean which is not the, which is not water. There's no ocean which is not water. Everything that is there is only water with reference to ocean. Similarly, there's no object in the world. There's no element. None of the five elements, none of the elementals, no living being or a non-living thing, no action or the result of action, no law, no experience, no pairs of opposites. There's nothing which is not Atma here. Oh, everything here is only Atma. When you say it is the reality is free from object limitation. So Atma is free from object limitation. And second thing, there's no place, no space where Atma is not. Because everything is accommodated in space, not a space is accommodated in Atma. That there's no such a thing called space at all outside of consciousness, outside of awareness. No form, name and function enjoys existence outside of consciousness. Therefore here, in the all accommodative space itself is accommodated in Atma. Therefore, we say Atma, the reality implied by the term Atma or Brahman is of the nature of limitlessness in terms of space. So spatially limitless, object-wise limitless. Not only that, time-wise also limitless. Because time itself is the subtlest, most intangible factor which doesn't exist outside of consciousness, the reality. You cannot talk about the time. Where does time exist? Where does space exist? Where do the forms, names and functions exist? So forms, names and functions which constitute the objective world, which exist within the realm of time and space, time, space, everything enjoys its existence only in awareness and consciousness. Therefore, it is the reality. In what form does reality obtain? Reality obtaining in the form of consciousness. Awareness is of the nature of limitlessness, is free from time limitation, is free from spatial limitation, is free from object limitation. Therefore, not being subject to these threefold limitations is said to be limitlessness. So reality is not subject to any of these threefold limitations. Reality being free from these threefold limitations, reality is of the nature of limitlessness, and there's no reality other than consciousness. Reality, the meaning of the word reality here, you have to say pure knowledge or pure consciousness. Therefore, it is this conscious reality obtaining in the form of consciousness or knowledge alone is implied by the terms Atma or Brahma, is free from all threefold limitations. For limitlessness is, you cannot go and search for limitlessness. Limitlessness is the very nature of the reality, which has to be understood. In fact, reality has to be understood in terms of its nature of limitlessness. The reality is arrived at in terms of its nature of knowledge, pure consciousness. Then we understand how this consciousness, reality in the form of consciousness, is of the nature of limitlessness. Therefore, limitlessness, understanding this limitlessness, being the nature of reality, thereby taking ownership of this limitlessness as the nature of one's own nature, and resolving the very I-self, seeing the fact about the I, what this I is, how you understand the wave, what this wave is, to understand the fact about the wave, wave is, there's no wave at all, really speaking. Wave is nothing but water, you have to say. Similarly, there's no such thing. Real I is I nothing but this reality, which is of the nature of limitlessness, obtained of your consciousness, is the I. There's no I otherwise. We understand. And in that clear vision, all the wrong notions about this I, all the superimposed ideas about the I will resolve. We are not giving up the notions here. Nobody else can make us or brainwash us. Make us repeatedly tell us. We are not getting brainwashed by the Shastram. Nor are we forced to give up the ideas. Nor can we make efforts to give up the ideas. These wrong notions which are naturally there, not that we are having the ideas. Notions are naturally there in the realm of thoughts. There is nothing wrong on our part. It's just listening to the Shastram without any guilt or hurt, with open-mindedly, openness, helps us see the fact. That's why it's called unfoldment. We have not done any mistake. It's not that you are not mistaking yourself. There is mistake. It's again another wrong teaching. You mistake yourself for something which you are not. In kindergarten class, in the very beginning, we may say that. You don't intentionally mistake yourself for something which you are not. There is error. You openly listen to the Shastram. We understand the fact that there is error. There is error. The error is understood. So repeated listening helps us see the fact as it is. So when all the wrong notions resolve about the self resolve, how can there be this common human fundamental problem of sense of smallness centered on I? I am small is just the notion which is naturally there. And purely because of the identity and purely because of the limitations of the body mind-sense complex. When this I sense is shifted from anatma body mind-sense complex and resolved, distinguished and understood being distinct and resolved in consciousness, naturally the wrong notions will resolve. Wrong notions resolve, and after resolving wrong notions, you don't attain fullness. You just, when there is notions resolve, means what is that you naturally, your real nature being fullness, and that is what is there. And that when there is fullness, when there is limitlessness being is understood as one's own nature, what is happiness. It is not a state of mind. And this happiness doesn't come, doesn't go also. It is already there. Limitlessness is happiness. Nothing is attained here. Therefore, now it is very, very clear that Atma is the only source of happiness because Atma is of the nature of limitlessness. In limitlessness, there is happiness. In limitation, there is unhappiness. Therefore, if that is made clear, therefore, what can be the most loved in the world? Happiness is loved. That's why moksha is the purusharta. And what is the implied meaning of the word moksha? Happiness. What is your goal? Your goal is not jnanam. Actually speaking, what is wanted is moksha. And jnanam, in jnanam, there is moksha. That is why we jnanam becomes the goal for us. Knowledge and moksha are identical. And knowledge of what? The truth only. Therefore, it is made clear that Atma is the only source of happiness. The all-pervasive, only, secondless reality obtaining in the form of pure knowledge. That means one's own innermost self of every being. Implicitly, Atma is the only source of happiness. Therefore, Atma is the most loved. Means you love yourself, your innermost self the most. You love yourself. Love for anything in the world is love for yourself. I love my daughter very much. Love for your daughter is actually love for yourself. Because when you are dependent on your daughter for your happiness, then you love your daughter. Really speaking, you love your daughter for happiness, you love your son for happiness, you love anybody in the world for happiness, and you love happiness, and happiness is yourself. You are happiness. Therefore, you love yourself the most. And this is the fact, whether we like it or not. So, now it has come to the Pamme mantra now. Tadetat preyaha. See the first sentence. Tadetat preyaha. Because kutaha cha atmatattvameva jnyeyam. Why one has to know the self? Why one should know the self? Because Atma is the only source of happiness. Therefore, discovering Atma is discovering happiness. Tadetat preyaha. Preyo vittat. So preyo, preyaha putrat. Putrat preyaha. See, Shankara Bhagavatpada, quotes this verse wherever possible. Shankara Bhagavatpada just loves this mantra. Wherever possible, he will quote. What actually is revealed in this mantra is, The Atma is the Jiva Atma is identical with Parama Atma, which means there's no Jiva Atma or Parama Atma, there's only Atma. And his Atma is the dearest to all. We can say Atma is dearer than anything else in the world. What the Kirti said here? Preyaha. See, Preyaha, Preyas, Preshta. There are three words we have. We also have the word Priyam. I said Priyam, Priyaha. Priya is adjective. Preya. So Preyas. Is here Preyaha. Putrat Preyaha. When you compare, in comparative degree, when you compare, Putrat Preyaha. Atma is dearer than your son. Vittat Preyaha. Dearer than wealth. Don't say Atma. Your own self is dearer than your son, dearer than your wealth. Vittat Preyaha. Anyasmat, Sarvasmat. Dearer than everything else. Anyasmat Sarvasmat. Dearer than everything else in the world. Sarvasmat. Antarataram. So, prayas. When you say dearer than everything else, means Atma is the dearest. Putrat Preyaha. Vittat Preyaha, all Panchami, Vibhakti fifth case. Vittat Preyaha, Anyasmat Sarvasmat Preyaha. Dearer than everything else in the world. Then what is that dearer? Dearer, what is that is dearer than one's own son, dearer than wealth, dearer than everything else in the world? It is said, Antarataram Yat. That which is most innermost, antarataram. We can say, we talk about the five koshas. When you talk about annamaya kosha, pranamaya is antarataram. And what is interior to pranamaya is manomaya. What is interior to manomaya is vijnanamaya. What is interior to anandamaya we say. But actually speaking, the innermost is the Atma. Or antaratara. Antarataram yad I am Atma. I am Atma. I am this nearest innermost self which is of the nature of all pervasiveness. You know, the all pervasive reality obtaining as the innermost nearest, innermost and the nearest self, you have to use both words, innermost and the nearest, is the dearest. The all pervasive self, obtaining as the innermost self, the nearest self, is the dearest, which is dearer than putraha, vittam, sarvasmat, anyasmat, sarvasmat. Dearer than sun, dearer than wealth, dearer than everything else in the world. Saha yaha anyam atmanaha priyam bruvanam. He who, yaha anyam atmanaha priyam. Whoever tells somebody else is dearer to me. Priyat bruyat. Priyam rotsyati iti. Ishvaroha Tathaiva Syat. Suppose if somebody says, this person is dearer to me than myself. If somebody says, really speaking, it is not true. Whoever thinks, there is no such a thing called no such a thing which is external other than oneself, it is dearer to one's own self. Dearer to one's own self. What about Bhagavan? It's a humbug, okay? If somebody says, I love God, I tell you love for God also is love for one's own self. Why do you talk about only children? Only Putraha, Vittam and other people. What about your love for God? All of people run to temples or churches or mosques, doesn't matter wherever they run. And wherever they go in search of God and want to worship God, pray to God. Because something attracts. People do need emotionally. People need emotionally, there's a need. There's nothing wrong. It's very important. I tell you, religious life, something called religious life itself has come into existence because it caters to the emotional need of a human mind, human being. Otherwise, without being religious, a person lives. If he's ethical, by some punyam, he's okay. Otherwise, without religion, man will go mad. Because religion helps a person to maintain his sanity. It caters the emotional needs. See, that's why worship gives some hope. Therefore, in the beginning it's okay, but really if analyzed as a thinker, do you really love God? No. Yes, Ishwaraha also. Love for Bhagavan also is love for one's own self. Therefore, Atmanameva Priyam Upasita. Atmanameva Priyam Upaste. Naha Asya Priyam Pramayuktam Bhavati. So, what is said here is, we'll see the mantra again. Even when we say, I love somebody, as long as the other person's behavior or association doesn't cause any pain to me, I like the person. And something, when I don't like, then the same love turns into hatred. That's why that love for any object is not permanent also. That's not real love. So that's why by loving anything, what one expresses is, one expresses one's real love for one's own real nature in terms of happiness. See, Upanishad introduces this mantra just to tell us the fact that we need not waste our time. We need not waste our time relying on people, relying on situations, relying on things, finding fault with them also. In fact, what you are searching for is happiness, and that you cannot get anywhere else. That for which you need to discover the truth, and you need to discover yourself. Even simply discovering the truth also is not important here. Discovering the truth, why should you discover the truth? Because discovering the truth means discovering yourself. There's no way of discovering the truth other than discovering yourself. We can never say, let me discover the truth of the world first, then let me discover what I am. No. That ulta thing is not possible. There are people who think, that's what a scientist do. They want to discover the truth of the world. They want to discover the truth of a cell, truth of the protoplasm, truth of this, truth of that. They're searching for the truth in the matter. And nothing wrong, they can search for the truth in the matter. Of course, the matter is truth. Matter is the reality. Matter is consciousness. But the problem is, this reality, what is searched for, happens to be not an object. Not an object of knowledge. Being the source of knowledge. the reality which implied by the term Atma, which is the only source of happiness, which is the dearest, which is the most loved, happens to be the source of knowledge, is not available for knowledge as an object of knowledge. The source of knowledge can never be an object of knowledge. The source of manifestation of knowledge can never be an object of knowledge. So here, Atma being not an object of knowledge, no matter how much ever we search, the search on the part of the mind means the search becomes extroverted, mind is extroverted, and then the search will be endless, because the one who obtaining as the searcher of the truth itself is what? The mind here. The searcher means there cannot be something called searcher, one who is searching for, without the mind. There can't be something called mind without manifestation of I sense. There must be manifestation of I sense in the form of a thought, without which mind is not possible. Therefore, without which something called searching is not possible. Therefore, who is the searcher here? Therefore, if we really analyze, there is no such thing. Atma is neither the searcher nor the searched. Not an object of searching. Not an object of knowledge. Atma is not an object of knowledge. Atma also. But Atma is the very source of knowledge. Therefore, searching for the truth, searching for the reality as an object in the world will make the search endless. Second thing, discovering the reality itself is not an important thing for us. When the Shastras makes it very clear, reality has to be discovered not as an object, but as the truth of the subject in one's own mind. Your reality is, where is it available for recognition? That is very important. Reality is available for recognition only in the mind and one's own self. Because the subtlest reality has to be searched in the subtle manifestation. If the whole jagat is said to be the manifestation of knowledge, the entire world, the grossest world, the gross elements, the grosser elementals, the entire world is manifestation of knowledge, no doubt. Everything here, anything which enjoys the status of being existent is definitely a manifestation of knowledge. Anything which shines is a manifestation of knowledge. Vilanguvadellam parambarulin totram. Anything which shines is what? Manifestation of knowledge. Anything which enjoys the status of being existent is manifestation of knowledge. Like every opaque thing, any opaque thing is a reflection of light. Every opaque thing, wherever it shines, it cannot shine independently by itself without the light being around. Every opaque thing is reflection of light. Similarly here, every object here which shines, which has the status of being existent, is manifestation of knowledge. No doubt, but still, even though the whole jagat is manifestation of knowledge, we cannot search for the knowledge, the manifest world. Why? Because the source of knowledge is the subtlest reality. The subtlest reality has to be searched in subtler manifestation. Much subtle manifestation, not in the gross manifestation. So grossest also is the manifestation of knowledge, no doubt. But you have to go to the subtlest of the manifestations to find much subtler than the subtlest. To discover the subtler than the subtlest, you have to go to the subtlest of the manifestations. And that is why we can say there's nothing which is as subtle as the human mind. Human mind is the subtlest of the manifestations. Of the subtler, again, mind is constituted of varieties of thoughts. And of all of them, what is that which must be first there without which something called mind, human mind, is not possible at all. What makes the human mind a mind? When is the human mind possible? Only first the knowledge, manifestation of knowledge of existence of one's own self, obtaining in him a thought in terms of I am, it must be there. Only then mind is possible. That is why the entire mind is sometimes said to be ahankara. In fact, the whole mind can be reduced to one word, ahankaraha. There cannot be intellect, there cannot be mind, there cannot be memory without the I, ego. Therefore, I must be there. Only then something called mind emotions are possible. There cannot be jealousy, hatred, anger, fear, anxiety, etc. without the I sense. There cannot be knowledge or enthusiasm or cheerfulness or, you know, recognition, cognition, etc. without the I sense. For intellect presupposes something called intellect, understanding, knowledge, etc. is possible only when there is I sense. Similarly, emotions are also possible. Mind also presupposes emotions, emotional aspect of the mind presupposes the I sense. Intellectual aspect of the mind presupposes the I sense. Similarly, memory. Memory also presupposes the I sense. If there's no I sense, there cannot be mind or memory or emotions. Therefore, manaha, buddhihi, chittam, all the three presuppose what? The I sense. Therefore, it is this I sense. What is this sense? The knowledge of the existence of one's own self in terms of I am. Isn't it? That I must be that is the subtlest and the foremost of the manifestations. That is why the aham vritti is also called Hiranyagarbha. I don't know whether you know, remember this or not. You know, the Hiranyagarbha, one of the names of Hiranyagarbha is aham. You know that? Aham has to come first. Only then emotions are possible. Only then perception is possible. Knowledge of the external world is possible. That's why we say Hiranyagarbha Srishti first, then Virat Srishti we say. First I has to become manifest. Only then I has to be here first. Then seeing the world, perceiving the world, then perception of the world is possible. When the world is perceived, the world becomes known, the world also enjoys the status of being existent. Therefore, seeing is creating. You understood this fact. Seeing is creating. Isn't it? For the world to be created, the world has to be seen. Seeing is creating. Seeing means knowing is creating. For which there must be the seer. And the seer means the source of seer. The seer is always there. The seer and the seen, both are already there. But there must be manifestation. That's why knowledge manifest is what? In the form of seer and the seen. Seer, seeing, seen, all the three are manifestations of the only reality, the pure knowledge. Why I'm telling all these things? Toward the end we have to see why reality has to be searched only in one's own mind. Not even searching here, I'm using the wrong expression. Reality has been recognized, is available for recognition in one's own mind. Why? Because mind is where I is. I is the foremost, first and the foremost of the manifestations. Without which mind, intellect, memory are not possible. Without which perception is not possible. Without which even the life is not possible. Without which the world is not possible. Without which experience is not possible. Without which action, there is an experience of pairs of opposites also is not possible. That is why I, and that is the foremost. What is that before the I? If you ask, Is there any such any other manifestation before the I? We ask, no. There cannot be, there is no nothing else before the manifestation of I. And the I is the first and the foremost of the manifestations. Highest form of manifestations. First and the foremost are the manifestations. Is the I sense. When the I sense is not manifest, there's no manifestation of knowledge in terms of I am, then what is pure knowledge, pure consciousness or pure awareness, the reality, the stillness of reality, undisturbed, disturbance free, you know, agitation free, stillness of reality. When the still reality is, when the stillness of reality, where is the world? Where is the world? World is, but world is as good as non-existent. If you want an example, you have to remember your own sleep. Whenever there is no I sense, how you are in sleep. Please remember, take 1 minute for you to think. In sleep, whenever you fall asleep, when the I sense is resolved, is there a world for you? What exists for you? That is how, whenever, when the manifestation of I sense is not there, there is no manifestation of I sense, then there is stillness of consciousness, which means, I use the expression stillness of consciousness just to say there is no such thing called agitation. There is no experience of agitation. There is no experience of restlessness. There is no experience of pairs of opposites. There is no experience of motions. There is no experience of movement. There is no experience of colors. There is no experience of world. There must be experience of the world for you to go through the motions, the agitations. Therefore, I use the expression just to say stillness. Therefore, before the manifestation of I sense, there is only stillness of reality. And the manifestation of knowledge in terms of I am itself is what? The beginning of the disturbance. Beginning of disturbance. So disturbance in your sleep is your dream. Disturbance in Bhagavan's sleep is what? Our world. So we are all Bhagavan's dream. We are all in Bhagavan's dream world. Disturbance in Bhagavan's sleep is our waking universe. And disturbance in our sleep is our dream. Anyway, what I want to say here is why Shastram emphasizes this. You are, you say, reality. See, happiness is a choiceless end. And happiness is the goal. Not knowledge. We are not interested in knowledge or Bhagavan or the truth. Our interest is only in happiness. Isn't it true or not? Who cares for Bhagavan? Who cares for knowledge? Who cares for wisdom? We are not interested in knowledge or wisdom. We are interested in our peace. We are interested in our happiness. Therefore, the knowledge becomes important because in knowledge, there is happiness discovered. Therefore, we're interested. And knowledge of the truth means, again it is said, that even though the whole world is manifestation of the truth, obtaining in the realm of knowledge, still truth is available for recognition. Truth happens with source of knowledge is the subtlest. Therefore, you have to go to the subtle manifestation. Subtlest of the manifestations is the mind, And the mind also, you know, if you analyze, the entire mind can be reduced to one word, ahankara. Why? The I sense, without which no such thing called mind is possible. And ahankara, that is the first and the foremost of the manifestations, highest form of manifestations. And there we go and see this I, where does it rise from? Where does it take this? Where does it resolve? If you see, you cannot say this I has to be resolved in that immeasurable, limitless, all pervasive, timeless reality, abstract, inexplicably incomprehensible reality, obtained from pure knowledge, pure consciousness. Therefore, it has, and discovering that, what happens? Our problem here is, what prevents us from enjoying the happiness which is already there as the nature? Already there. What prevents us from enjoying the nature is, it is the wrong notions. Therefore, the wrong notions will resolve. The idea is, you can never, that's why wise person, the jnani is already free. Ajnani is also already free. Everybody is already free. But in ignorance, there's a notion that you are bound. So bondage is only in notion. Bondage has been resolved. The wrong notion has been resolved. So what can be done for that? That is why the truth has been discovered as one's own self. The truth has been discovered as one's own self. And the Shastram says, everywhere it is, in every Upanishad is made very clear that you have to go back to one's own self. Atmete, Upasit, etc. We have seen. And you have to see, when you arrive at it, you discover the truth as the innermost essence. Thereby, you also come to know of the fact that the same reality is the innermost being, innermost essence of all the beings also. Then the wrong notions is all, then you don't need to attain happiness. See, identity with the body, mind and forms of spirit. The identity with the body, mind and complex goes cognitively resolved, not physically. You are free. Otherwise, physical body limit, wise person, ignorant person, the limitations of body, mind and complex will be there. Body will be limited. Mind will be limited. But cognitively, emotionally, the person is free. Wise person is free. Therefore, Atma is the only source of happiness. Atma is the most loved. Atma is the dearest. Atma is dearer than one's own son. Atma is dearer than wealth. Atma is dearer than anything else in the world. Which means that is the innermost, all-pervasive reality, obtaining as the innermost essence of every being. One's own self is the only source of happiness. Your Atma is the most loved. Okay? I have finished only one sentence. Now what I have finished? Let me tell you which I have finished. Tadeta priyaha putrat priyo vittat priyo nyasmat sarvasmat antarataram yadayam atma. I finished until then. Antaratayam matma I finished. Okay? Rest we'll see next class. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.